I'm Chris Nessie, host of Behind the Mic, Voices of the EPN, a part of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other interesting education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another great episode of My EdTech Life. Thank you so much for joining us on this wonderful Tuesday. I know it is after New Year's. It's wonderful. Hopefully, every single one of you had an amazing, amazing time of celebration, reflection, and are just getting geared up and pumped up for another wonderful year as we welcome 2024. And I am excited, definitely, to welcome 2024. As always, loving what I do, bringing you some amazing conversations, bringing you some amazing guests, and just ways that we can continue to grow within our education space, not only professionally, but personally, and obviously bringing you a lot of ed tech so we can go ahead and add those tools to our tool belts as well, but obviously also reflecting on our practice and how we can incorporate that. So thank you so much for all of your support in 2023, and I am definitely excited for an amazing 2024 that is coming our way. And today is definitely no exception. I am definitely excited to be joined by an amazing guest. I mean, I have followed Dr. Saba Kwidwai for a great while, and she's doing some amazing things. And I would just love to welcome her to the show. How are you doing today?
I am good. I'm excited to kick off my 2024 with you.
Well, I'm excited too as well. This is a big moment for me. Like I said, it's not always that I get some amazing guests like you, and this is wonderful. I have been listening to your stuff. I follow you on Instagram. I follow you on LinkedIn, and just the insights that you share, you know, just the lessons, your experience, it's just all wonderful. And especially for us that are navigating this space, which is the AI space, but also the design thinking space. This is great. And I'm really excited about today's conversation. However, for our audience members or some of our audience members that may not be connected with you yet or may not be familiar with your work just yet, I know that today your followers will definitely go up because of all the knowledge bombs that you're going to be dropping today. So if you can give us a little brief introduction and what your context is within the education space, and then we'll dive into our conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a huge listener of the podcast. I mean, you're what, like 200 and something episodes in. That's no small accomplishment. But my name is Saba. I started my career as a high school history teacher. And I feel like right now there's just like so many deja vu moments because I graduated into a time, 2007, very much what feels like what we're seeing right now. Back in 2007, though, it was like the iPhone and mobility and apps and things like that were completely like reshaping like our digital landscape. And, you know, if you've ever heard my story, you know, I share like I walked into like the world of work as a teacher, just really, really, really unprepared. I had an amazing first year job, but then 2008 with the recession, I got my first layoff notice as well at the end of my first year of teaching. And it was a real wake up call for me. And it, you know, it took about 5 years. It was like, I always got another job. And so I was always fortunate in that way. But at the end of the year, it was the same story. Sorry, budget cuts, layoff, you're not tenured. And I share how it wasn't until 2010, I think it was, I read Lynchpin by Seth Godin, where he was like, that deal that you go to school, you get good grades, you graduate, and like you get a stable job, that like expired in 2007. And in today's world of work, he was basically like, you have to figure out what makes you unique, how you're going to articulate what makes you unique, but more importantly, what problems do you help people solve? And that really like made me just look at the work I did in a different way. It's not that I had to change the things I was doing. I was still teaching history. I was still doing all the things, but I had to reframe the value I brought to the table. And so long story short, that kind of brought me into the ed tech space because I was really passionate about technology and literacy in history. And that got me, and then it was like a shift. Then it was like, instead of having to apply for things, I was being recruited by places. Can you come and help us do that too? So I was recruited by USC, then later Apple. And then while I was at Apple, I wanted to add some research to like the past decade of these like different trial and error things I had experienced with technology. And so I went back to school to do my doctorate to really look at design thinking, which is kind of what my, you know, secret sauce was, you know, the past couple of years, and look at does design thinking really do what I think it's doing in these spaces. And so I worked with a school, Design 39 in San Diego, California, to kind of really add some research to how do we prepare people for a rapidly changing world, you know, like, and we had actually talked about AI back in like 2017, we thought was so far off. And so the documentary released in 2022, September, and in November there was ChatGPT, and so it's been really interesting.
Yeah, no, exactly. And you know, it's so great that you mentioned that, you know, the parallels, and you're absolutely right, you know. And I had Jason Guglia also on here last week, and such an amazing show, and also him finding parallels, you know, through the work that he's been doing and his doctoral studies, and of course with technology, and of course ChatGPT, which we've been talking about over the past year. So I want to get your take, you know, how was your 2023 once, you know, ChatGPT came out in November, you know, back, you know, what was it in 2022, and then late November, late 2022, and coming into 2023. And of course, the experience that you already had, that you had already been talking about it in 2017, and now, you know, the work that you've done in 2023, what have been, I guess, the biggest takeaways for you on, you know, as far as educators are concerned?
Oh my gosh. Okay. So I feel like 2023 was like a little bit of like a dream year for me that was a decade in the making. And so that's the first thing that I think is really important to kind of like take back from something, is that when you have a vision, and I feel like when you're in education, because of the nature of the fact that you are working with people so much younger than you, you get a very unique glimpse into the future, future personalities, future interests, future trends, future ways of communication, not because of technology, but because of the interactions that you get to observe on a daily basis. And those insights really help you see a picture of what's coming next that most of the world just doesn't get to see. And so I think having belief in your vision is one of the things that's also backed by data, because people also have awful visions. And, you know, I've gotten a little bit more careful about how I say this, like, whatever your dream is, like, make it come true. Like, some people have really awful visions for the world and, like, you know, power and corruption and all these different things. But for the most part, if you are, you know, human-centered and you care about people and the planet, being able to believe in your vision for what's possible and taking those small daily steps towards getting there is probably one of the hardest but most rewarding things to do, which is why I would say the second thing would be like the biggest lesson I learned is like the people around you. Like, nothing is possible without people. Like, nothing is possible without the motivation, the support, the encouragement of people. Just the most simplest of things, like somebody appreciating you, somebody, you know, giving you that extra, like, yeah, like, keep doing what you're doing, like, or this is helping me, those little bits and pieces there. And I think the third thing I would say that I realized in 2023, and this becomes more and more true with every single thing that happens, is yesterday's luxuries become tomorrow's necessities. So for example, if you think about sometimes things like, you know, me and you, like, we're both creators in a way, right? Like, we both have these podcasts, we have these different ways in which we're sharing and creating ideas and content. Whereas yesterday you could have said, maybe that's like a little bit of a luxury, like you're doing it like because maybe you want to build a different type of business or you want to do whatever. I think when I think about educators and I think about leaders, I think today those things almost become necessary if you want to really, and students and like young people too, if you want to stand out as a human in an AI world. So
that is great. I mean, that is so much, that is so deep. And obviously you've only hit the tip of the iceberg, because if anybody that follows you on LinkedIn and all your socials, I mean, there is so much more there to unpack. But thank you so much for those highlights, you know, that you shared with us. And now, as far as the work that you're doing, you know, through your, you know, conferences, workshops and things of that sort, you know, what were some of the biggest surprises there coming in from that leadership standpoint, those educators that are coming to your workshops? Was there a lot of fear? What did you notice from the beginning, you know, the as far as GPT being released, and then later towards the end of the year, did the comfort level increase? Was there still continual growth? Was there a lull? what was it that you saw, and what is it that you might think we might be seeing in 2024?
Oh, that's really interesting. Okay, so I saw a lot of different things. I would say the number one thing that really surprised me the most was we've gotten so used to the grind, like the things that we don't like, the things that we do because we feel like we have to do, that we don't even question them anymore. And one of the first things to actually be able to leverage AI tools like ChatGPT and things like that to do the things that it promises it can bring, you first need to question the things that you don't like to do. You first have to be able to figure out, wait a minute, why do we work 5 days a week, right? Like, why do we have 40-hour work weeks? Like, why? Like, when all these different technologies and all these different things exist, why do so many of these industrial structures still hold so true that we don't even question them anymore? And then if we do question them, we get stuck, kind of the way we did with like remote work. And so I feel like being able to really be like, wait a minute, like, why do we do this? Like, whether it's homework, and it doesn't even have to be something really big, like maybe it's like, yeah, why don't I get to go work out as much as I want to? Why don't I get to like cook my own meals as much as I would like to? And once you identify those things that, wait a minute, I don't like doing these, I would much rather be doing this, now you have an entry point to be able to actually leverage the technology around you to help you build and design those solutions. I've been sharing a quote a lot. I actually share it in almost every single thing I do. It's by Don Norman. And he says, a brilliant solution to the wrong problem is worse than no solution at all. So solve the right problem. And I think we spend a lot of time like creating these amazing solutions to just like the incorrect problems. So being able to first identify that problem is the place that I think we struggle the most. But once you do that work, the agency and ownership people take over designing the solution is so much more authentic. People are so much more motivated. And it also takes a lot of the burden off of the people who feel like they need to train everyone to learn these new things. And so that was a really big takeaway for me, which brought me to the second realization, which was really shocking to me, which is why a lot of people don't pay for ChatGPT. You know, at $20 a month, sure, you could be like, oh, well, that's a really expensive like add-on and this and that. But once I always tell people, like, if I told you I could hire somebody for $20 a month to do all these things for you, you wouldn't even believe me. Like, you would think it was such a bargain that somebody was willing to work for just $20 a month to do the tasks that I'm telling you it can do for you. And so because a lot of people didn't realize the problems that could be solved, how it could actually be leveraged, it brought us to this point where also people were not fully immersed in the full scale and scope of it. So when I would go places and ask people, how are you using it? They'd be like, oh, I'm writing a letter of recommendation. I'm writing an email, like, yay me. And that's great. Like, I'm all for people having a starting place, but that starting place was so like December 2022. Or December 2022, and without that full understanding of the scale and scope, you can't build strategy. So if you're somebody whose only experience is with ChatGPT from a text-based version, and now you're also responsible for training other people, for coaching other people, for building strategy for the next even 1 to 2 years in your organization, you're at such a significant disadvantage that you, by the time, I always tell people, it's like you're planning for iPods and tomorrow everyone walks in with a MacBook. Like, you're just so unprepared for like a very small marginal cost.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. I mean, at least in the education space, I mean, we know, like, you know, K-12, everybody was panicking and everybody's like, that's it, it's over. You know, teachers are like, that's it, they're coming over after our jobs. You know, the robots are here, we don't have to do anything anymore and so on. But they don't realize that there's still a more of a human aspect in being able to use the tools. And one of the things that you mentioned and that you've been talking about that I've been picking up on, which kind of makes sense, is that human-centric approach, you know, still that human touch and the tech working together. And I think at the very beginning, you know, like you mentioned in November 2022, December, and then the first part of the year, it was still that fear of, well, the AI is going to do everything and that's it. And then, of course, just using AI for those menial tasks that we don't want to do, like the emails, but not looking at the big picture. And so for myself, I'm more of a kind of wait and see kind of guy, just because I'm working in the K-12 space. And I'm kind of glad that I waited a little bit, just because we know Dev Day came and then we noticed that there was a lot of apps that dropped off, a lot of, you know, platforms that dropped off because of GPTs and, of course, new things coming out. And now just how powerful just leveraging ChatGPT is as opposed to looking at other platforms. But at the end of the day, it's that human touch, that human aspect. So I want to ask you, for all those educators that are still out there, and maybe for a lot of people that are in the high places, you know, in leadership within many school districts or even tech companies, what are some of the ways that you share how you can still live together with the tech, you know, that human aspect and the tech side, and still work together to get some great products and just some great output?
So here's a really interesting thing about that is, like, I don't feel like they're like right now, anyone who is actively taking a role is helping to create that answer. And I think that's the most important thing to acknowledge right now is that there is no one person who has figured out what that human machine co-collaboration coexistence looks like. And it's like, even the moment like you feel like you do, something new comes and now it's like disrupted the space a little bit more, where you're just like kind of not back to square one, but it's got you rethinking. So here's the first thing that I think is really important as you even enter that space, because I believe like 80% of everything is mindset. And I don't think there's anything wrong with fear. I think, in fact, right now, if you don't have a little bit of fear around your job, if you don't have a little bit of fear around your future, then you are clueless about AI. And even more than that, you're clueless about its capabilities. So I'm also like, you know, like a layoff for me, that fear of not having a job motivated me to go 10 times harder. And I think when we look back, I study a lot of people's like stories, like I read a lot of biographies, or, you know, when you read about people who have, you know, because behind every success you see is just this like really, really, really like long story and journey that just have so many themes across the board. And one of those themes is fear. One of those themes is, you know, not having things the way you wanted them to be and figuring out and wondering and asking, is there a different way? And so I think right now everybody should have a healthy dose of fear to really get you thinking about what you want moving forward. And so the best, you know, when you kind of think about that, then from that lens, then it's like, okay, like, again, what can be a different way and how can we kind of move forward in that direction in being able to kind of go to the things it is that we're hoping to do. And then the technology then after that kind of becomes the solution. So for some people, it may be one thing. For some people, it may be another thing. But I think one of the things that we see right now that is, I say it's pretty like dangerous a little bit, is we see a lot of like 20th century practices being layered with 21st century tools in the name of AI. Like AI is going to do this thing for you. And these promises that are really playing on people's emotions of burnout, frustration, being overwhelmed. And at first glance, it might seem like, oh, wow, that's amazing. But when you dig into, okay, if it's doing that, what am I doing now that I couldn't have done before? And that piece is missing from the conversation. So we see a lot of people adopting these apps. I won't name names, everybody knows the one that I'm not a fan of, but like with everybody adopting these kinds of like, you know, ed tech apps, if you will, but not looking at the rest of the spectrum. So like adopting that app here is like fine, but if you're not looking at the learning journey of the adult of, okay, we're starting here, because that's the argument people give me when I tell them, please don't use these tools, is, well, you know, like people just aren't ready, or like they need to start somewhere. And I feel like that's where like the teacher in me is a little offended. I mean, just imagine having a group of students and being like, yeah, I just don't think they're ready for that yet. So I'm just going to leave them over here. Like, no, like our job is to design a journey for people in how they learn. And that's not just for young people or for kids, that's for everybody. And so I think when you introduce a certain tool, I think really be mindful of the journey you're trying to take people on, because I see these really ambitious, like, graduate profiles and all these different things. And then I see this here, and we'll have that conversation of, okay, if this is what you're choosing to train people on, is it helping you get here, or is it actually preventing you from getting here quicker than you could? And so I think that learning journey is probably the most important as you think about what it means to be human-centered. Because again, until you don't actually start asking, is there a different way? Can I do things that I couldn't have done before? And you actually remember what those things are. That's the other thing. Like, I was reminded of the other day, like, one of my favorite books is The Second Mountain by David Brooks. And in it, like, he uses this one word. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly, but it's called acedia, which is like the quieting of passion. And he says, like, in life, you have like two mountains, and your first mountain is like all the things you think you're supposed to do, and you need them, right? Like, you need the income, you need the job, you need the school, you need all the things. But most people stop there, whereas your second mountain is, what is my purpose in life? What is going to give me meaning? What is going to bring that fulfillment? What is going to bring me joy, happiness, all those things? And oftentimes, they're not the things that are on your first mountain, but your first mountain helps you get there. And so I think, again, another luxury, right? People would be like, oh, well, not everybody gets to do that. But now you do. And that luxury slowly becomes a necessity. And how you plan not just your life as an adult, but how you think about preparing young people too.
Oh, that is great. And, you know, and I'm not going to lie, you know, being in the K-12 space, you always want to find ways for teachers to obviously leverage the tech. And the biggest thing has always been, you know, time. So some of the things like you mentioned, and I know there was a very interesting LinkedIn thread on Saturday that a lot of us were part of. And man, boy, did it just get a lot of traction. And I was just there like with my popcorn and reading the comments and everything, because I see both sides. But at the same time, one of the things that I do appreciate that you mentioned is, you know, the learning journey, and it's very important to understand how this works, how the tech works. And oftentimes it's just show me what to click on and that's it, and I'm just going to kind of go from there. And I have seen and experienced where a lot of educators, not just within my district, but in other places, it's like, well, we don't give the students the benefit of the doubt that they can learn. And like you mentioned, we kind of leave them behind and say, well, no, they're not ready for that yet. Let's just leave them here with the little bit. And sometimes I wonder, are we leaving them there because that is where your comfort level is as a teacher and you don't want to push? Or do you really, really think that your students are not able to do that because now, well, it's going to be more work for me and, you know, I got to move on and so on. And you're missing out on that journey, not only for yourself as the educator to continue to grow, but also for the students. Now, as far as that thread is concerned, it was very interesting because I kind of in the middle, I see where there's a lot of programs or platforms that are out there that are already offering like, hey, here's a solution for every little thing here. But in my mind, I'm thinking, well, if the fear of technology coming over and taking our jobs is there, then there's a lot of educators that are there just already, you know, just outsourcing all of these things to the machine. It's almost like, hey, well, you know, what do I need to do? And then we forget about good pedagogy. And I think good pedagogy can never be replaced by, you know, the AI just yet. You can work together, you know, like I'm saying, you can enhance lessons. And teachers, I always see them as learning engineers, you know, where they're the ones that are engineering the experience and they get to choose what tech, but also allow students to choose what tech might work for them. So I think that sometimes does take away from that learning experience. And there are a lot of platforms that are really cashing in on here, this is going to save you the time here. Now you don't have to do an IEP. But in my mind, I'm like, oh my gosh, you're allowing this program to do an IEP for you that is a legal document that you have to sign and put your name behind. And what if something is not right? That can cost you your license. There's a huge risk there. And sometimes we don't measure that because the IEP is the last thing I ever want to do. So I'm just going to go ahead and put it in here, tell it what to give me, sign it, and I'm good. But no, we need to be very cautious with that.
Yeah, no, and that's a really great point. You know, at the end of, I think at the beginning of last year or at the end of the year before, I can't remember exactly when, there was that quote that was like really widely circulated, which in the beginning kind of made sense, which was like, AI won't replace you, but a person using mm-hmm. AI will. And I always say, like, what I've realized now at the end of this year is that a person using AI wrong is going to be 1,000 times worse off than the person not using AI at all. Like I actually have a couple of interactions with people where like, and again, it was like motivation for me to figure out how to like just do it myself. But I started noticing a lot of people that I was outsourcing, like my podcast show notes to, or editing to, or things like that, the quality just like drop off significantly. And like, I always like, you know, look like anything I outsource, I'm like looking over with like a hawk's eye, like once before it goes like public. And I'm just like, what is this? And they were like, oh yeah, sorry, we've been testing AI tools. And you know, like there's just a lot that can go wrong with your AI use as well. And so I think it's just, again, I think it's just like, there's so much, it's just so important right now to be so reflective about what it is you actually want to create, who it is you want to be. That's like my other favorite book that like I've been recommending. Like, I just think it's so, I love people that get super meta, like not the broad general, like broad generalizations, the ones that are like super, super meta about helping you think. And Atomic Habits is just like, I think it just hit like all time bestseller on Amazon, like all time from like all books, like all everything top something. And I'm not surprised because it's such a meta book that gets so deep into like things with such basic questions. And one of the questions it asks is like, you know, like, who do you want to be? And I think a lot of us really struggle to create that answer. And it's not an answer you come up with in just like a minute, but getting really self-aware about who you want to be and what qualities and value you bring to the table. Because as somebody who like was in the K-12 space, this idea that like you won't be replaced by a robot, like we didn't need robots to be laid off before. Like you didn't need AI to like not have a job before. And so the idea that we do have this, which is very different for a capitalist society, the way we run things in the United States than it is say for like a London or a Finland or like a somewhere else. So like the politics and like economics of your country are going to play such a role in answers as well. But like in a country where like your healthcare, your like all the things, your retirement, like your all the things depend upon your job, I feel like we have to be, I feel like you should have even more fear about what's coming tomorrow than less. And one of the things that I hear people say a lot is like, oh, well, you're a teacher, like you'll never be replaced. Or like, you know, even like the pedagogy aspect a little bit. But like, if you've got bad pedagogy, like even what good teaching is or good pedagogy is so vague and so not well-defined and also not very existent in a lot of places. So the idea that an AI could do a better job than you tomorrow, I think is a little bit hard to dispute in some places. Because if an AI can come along and help me could have this entire entrepreneurial project-based experience that my class isn't getting me, and it can give it to me in 3 hours, that opens up, let's say, if I'm still doing the 8-hour workday, or let's say I'm not doing the 8-hour workday, I only do 6 hours, and that opens up another 3 hours of my day to work with a coach that somebody's hired for me, or you know, a coach who's going to come in and help this like 10 group of students do something, you better believe people are going to opt for that model over the traditional one that's not getting their kids outcomes. And so I always say, like, one of my predictions for 2024 is that alternative forms of education are going to start to become mainstream, because it's the first time, this is actually a really unique element of change, that every generation is experiencing it at the same time. When we think back to iPads, when we think back to like any other technology, it didn't really impact the workplace for adults in the same way that it did for people who were going to be there 15 years from now. So making the case for why things need to change is harder when not everybody can imagine that change or understand what it looks like. But when I, as a parent, am seeing firsthand the impact of AI on my job, on my work, on my skills, you better believe I'm asking different questions about what my kids are learning and how my kids are being prepared for things that I see changing right away. And it's a lot more common, I think, amongst people who are more in the entrepreneurial space or who are in spaces that are a little bit more progressive. But I think more and more people are going to start asking quality control, like, what is my kid really being prepared for? How is this really helping them? And how are you going to get them there? And if somebody else can do it better, then yeah, I'm going to put them there. And so I think, like, I do think we have to be fearful, and maybe fearful is the wrong word, but I think we've got to be more diligent about what we're doing, why we're doing it, and how we're doing it. And that the answers are there, the tools are there, the support is there. It's just the organization of it to break free of the traditional mold, to get into something new is not an easy journey. And it's an 80% mindset journey, not a technology journey.
Wow. Yeah. Excellent. And, you know, and you're absolutely right. I mean, as we've seen, even in this past year, we've seen Alpha, you know, in Austin, Texas, the school that really has no teachers. They have maybe just somebody there that's kind of just, you know, like a learning engineer, like I said, or just somebody that's there. And the students come in, they can come in for a couple of hours, they do their work. There's actually one in my neck of the woods here in the Rio Grande Valley in Brownsville, Texas. Also, so you mentioned alternative forms of education, parents asking the questions, and especially like you mentioned, parents that may be in those entrepreneurial spaces, or as AI starts coming in more into some of their businesses, whether it be banking and so on and so forth, and they start asking those questions. So my question to you is what can we do, or at least from your experiences in speaking with educators or speaking, you know, with, you know, maybe directors and CTOs and things of that sort during your workshops, what are their biggest concerns, and maybe what can we start looking at? Because like you mentioned, it's always that fear, and it's also that combating the, this is the way we've always done it, kind of approach. And how do we break that mold? So what would be some kind of easy steps to kind of start having really those conversations and making a move towards change?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think it's first even being able to just acknowledge, okay, this is something we need to have a conversation about, right? It's not just about how do we bring in these tools to, you know, use them here, or just like, let's adopt the latest platform or the latest application and just layer that in. I think the first thing is to really do like an examination of sorts of, okay, what is moving us forward, right? Like, and a lot of people already have this. I always tell people, like, there's not a lot of starting from scratch you need to do. It's just that now you've got some support to actually get to where you want to go. So most people have either a vision, mission, right? They've got value statements. They've got a graduate profile. Like, people have something about who they want to be, right? It is that aspirational. When our kids graduate, this is, you know, these are the words. When you go walk into a gym, you see the words on there, right? Like, these are the things our kids, this is what we want them to be. This is who we want our graduates to be. This is our vision for our school. That's it. That plain black and white up there, right in your face. This is our vision. This is who we want to be. When you think about that vision and you think about your organization in this moment, what is moving you forward and what is holding you back? And you want to take the things that are moving you forward and look at how do you double down on those and how do you bring those to even more people? Because usually the things that are moving you forward are being done by a subset of people who have put in that extra effort, who have put in those extra hours and things like that. And the things that are holding you back are usually structural things. 90%, oftentimes, a lot of times it's mindset things. People just don't want to do this. Like, how do we get people to do this? Like, it's so motivational, so mindset related oftentimes. And before... And this is like a design thinking practice. This is not something we're just making up. It's the sailboat method. But before, the really hard thing was you had to figure out how you were going to take the things that were holding you back and create solutions. And by automatically making AI a member of your team. So this is where, again, that co-collaboration adds value, and you are the value creator, because it's everyone can identify what's holding us back. Everyone can identify the problems. Very few people can be like, all right, here's what we're going to do about it. 1, 2, 3. And before, you had to be the person who had to do that yourself. And today, all you have to do is go into like a ChatGPT type tool. And, you know, I'm always an advocate for 4, although I am really curious about Copilot. You know, it says, like, I know Bing has always said it used 4, but it never really worked the same way. But with them rebranding under Copilot and whatnot, I'm curious if, you know, Copilot gives 4 type results the way ChatGPT does. But basically, if you go in there and you're like, hey, this is the scenario, right? And I call this Spark. This is our situation. Here's our vision. This is what we really want to do in our district, or even in my classroom. This is what I want to do. Like, forget district. Even if you're just doing this from a classroom lens, this is really like the vision my school has. And here's the grade that I teach. Here's what I'm doing, whatever your scenario situation is. But the problem, these are the things that are holding us back, right? I need to prioritize these things. Let's say this is my number one. Like, everybody votes, right? This is what we want to prioritize. If we can fix this, it's going to open up the door to helping us solve everything else. find that what it is you want to prioritize. Tell it, this is what I want to prioritize, the problem I want to solve. Aspiration, why does this matter? This matters to me because I really care about the kids that we're working with, and I want to make sure everyone graduates like in alignment with our vision, and it's going to make me happy, right? Results. We want to be able to see these problems go away, like whatever other results it is you want to see in your organization, put those down. And then the last piece of that is kismet. Okay, give me three strategies that are going to help me solve this problem, that are going to help me get started in moving in this direction to get closer to this vision. And is there anything I'm missing? And those results that it generates are so mind-blowing that this is where when people are like, oh, the machine just isn't as smart as a human, I'm like, have you interacted with it? Like, I don't know most people. Like, this is also where the drop-off point in my design thinking workshops was prior to ChatGPT. It was really hard for people to actually generate solutions. And then the amount of time it did take them, our meeting was over, right? Now we've got to wait till the second workshop to go and do that. Whereas this entire process that I just shared can be done in 30 minutes. So if in 30 minutes, I now took what used to take 3 hours, I've now condensed that down into 30 minutes. And now you've also identified the challenge. You've also kind of now brainstormed and sifted through the different solutions the AI tool is sharing with you, and you pick one. Okay, great. That's the one we pick. I don't really have a lot of time. We've got 30 minutes left in our meeting. And what can we do over? We do a chart 1 day, 1 week, 1 month. And you can change those numbers, but it's usually a good way to kind of organize it. And we say, okay, create a plan for me. What can I do in the next 1 day, 1 week, 1 month that's going to move me closer to where I want to go? And you're not doing any of this yourself. Like, you are the guide. You are that facilitator. You are the one who is giving the human command for what you want your AI tool to do. And this is a lot, I think, this isn't as easy as it sounds. But once you do it once, once you do it twice, it becomes such an organic way of working. And that, to me, is the power of design thinking, is that these approaches, you don't change the approach every single time. There's a few exercises, few strategies that can help you in 90% of your scenarios. But once you begin to have that interaction, it's like a new way. That's why I say it's like onboarding a teammate, because now it's like, oh, okay, wow, this person's so great to work with. Like, oh my God, did you know they could do that? Like, oh, I've got this problem. Let me see how this person can help me. Except in this case, it's not a person, it's your AI tool. So merging these design thinking strategies together with these AI tools allows you to literally do, like, literally design thinking workshops. We used to do them as a year-long series. And we used to do 3 workshops a year, and it used to be like 6-hour days. Those 3 workshops that used to take 6 hours, we now do in 2 sessions for a total of 3 hours each. Like, it's just unbelievable how we have condensed our ability to move from idea, challenge, frustration, overwhelmed, I don't know what to do, I'm struggling, there's no answer that I can see, to, oh my God, we have an action plan, we can implement on this, and these are things we can actually do that don't make us feel overwhelmed.
And that is great. And, you know, and just the way that you explained that, I got really excited about that, because I understand that. And like you said, even though it may seem like right now for somebody that may be listening, somebody new, they're like, oh my gosh, this seems overwhelming. But you're absolutely right. It's part of that learning journey. And it's part of just taking that Spark framework and just really just practicing, going with it, working with it, and seeing what the tool can do, and being able to just be blown away by some of those results. And like I said, I think oftentimes people kind of give up, or maybe they feel overwhelmed because I'm putting this in and it's not giving me the results that I need. But I've been on several episodes with guests, and, you know, even being on podcasts myself, I always share with them that a tech tool should be treated, you know, like an instrument, and it takes time to learn an instrument. You're not going to learn it right away. Like, when you pick up a guitar, you're not going to be playing, you know, Stairway to Heaven right away. You know, it's going to take you some time to learn some chords. You're going to learn the basics. You're going to build some calluses that are going to hurt, and it's going to make you want to give up. But the more you practice it, the more you see the outcome, then you start playing some melodies, and now you're getting some amazing outputs. And I think for teachers, I think oftentimes, and kind of going back to what we were talking about shortly, because I love the way that you, you know, phrased this and just spoke it out, because I'm like, okay, this is something that I could do with some of my teachers too, as well. And even for myself, but oftentimes is they just that immediacy. They just want the result. Just give me the tool. Let me plug it in. It already has a prompt here where I can put this in and then it's going to spit something out for me and I'm just going to go with that. One of the biggest fears that I have is the bad habits that we can be building. And I always tell teachers, it's like, I can show you this tech tool, but I'm fearful many times. And I talk to them, I don't want us to build a bad habit of just taking the very first output, because you assume that just because you put in your standard in here, you're going to get that output and you're going to just roll with it and go without even checking anything. So what are your thoughts on that? Kind of, I guess maybe this kind of goes back to that question on some of the platforms that are out there where it's just plug and chug and you're going to get that output. I have that fear that a lot of educators are just going to fall into that bad habit of just taking that very first output because, hey, this is what it said it can do, and I believe it 100%, and it's going to take care of everything for me, so I'm just going to roll with it. What would be some of the, maybe just some advice on how to just be very cautious with that as well?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question, and I think the really hard thing for an educator, like if I think back to like sort of like being in the classroom, doing those things, it's really hard sometimes when your leadership doesn't have that vision that's being communicated. And I think that's actually a thing that is an in-between between the last thing we just talked about around that strategy mm-hmm. and leading into this question. Yeah, I'll tell you another really interesting thing I noticed that a lot of people don't do that are really easy things to do. And that's just plain communication with people. Like, hey, like, how's it going for you? Like, hey, is there anything I can help you with? This is our vision. Like, I think when you are a leader, you have to be constantly communicating and motivating your people. I think it was Rueda. There's a book. I think it's called From Research to Results, I think it's called. And in the book, one of the things he says is like, we assume that people need knowledge. And so that's what like 80% of our time is dedicated to. Let me teach you this. Let me show you this. But what people really need is motivation, and not that one-off 60-minute keynote rah-rah kind of motivation, but the small daily check-ins or the weekly check-ins or a video that's shared or something that just gives me that little burst, that little caffeine maybe to sustain the motivation towards outcomes. And so that's a really important in-between piece between these things. And so I think when you are constantly kind of reinforcing what it is you're hoping for, your people now have a criteria to match something against. This is another thing we see is missing that we help people with is you need a criteria for what you want your AI tool to do for you and how you want it to perform so that you can align together as an organization around, okay, yes, this hits the box. Yes, this hits the box. We worked with a lot of people last year who were like piloting different tools, but they were piloting them without a criteria. So it's like, you're giving it out to all these people. Okay, how are these people assessing? Yes, I like this. Yes, this works for me. No, it doesn't, beyond like, it's cool to use or it has a good interface. And so I think knowing, again, going back to what is it that you actually want? What is it that you want to be? How do you want to create that? Without, absent of that, it's really hard to do or to even ask somebody else to do some of the things that you're asking it to do, right? Because for some people, that baseline, I mean, honestly, if a tool has been adopted by as many people as they're saying, clearly there's a lot of people that don't care about that criteria, right? That are perfectly okay with those results and those outcomes, especially because we're seeing a few of those organizations mm-hmm. also move to the enterprise version of this tool. So I think somebody has to want the criteria and have the criteria to even get to the point that you're asking for to be able to assess, like a rubric, right? If I'm writing an essay, but nobody's told me how they want me to write the essay or how they're going to hold me accountable for the essay, well, then I might write this. And to some people, it could be great. And to some people, it might not be. But we've got different filters and different criteria for what it is we actually want as our end outcome. So I think that's a really important part of it. I think what's so interesting to me in this entire conversation is all of it could be grouped under that concept of like productive struggle, or like in just simplest terms, learning. Like learning is uncomfortable. Learning is like hard. Like, and but it's also like that hardness and that productive struggle that gives you so much joy and satisfaction, which is why as a teacher, right, you give your students challenging tasks. They might not enjoy it in the moment, but we know we're helping you work towards that. We motivate you along the way. We're built. That's why the relationships really matter in learning, right? Because you you need that person to bond with to be able to invest in whatever it is you're doing to get to where you want to go, which is a celebration at the end of where you are, which is why we do those reflections, like, where was I now? Where am I to here now? And that's why those things matter. So that is learning. And what's so interesting to me is like watching so many adults complain about critical thinking being lost and, you know, kids cheating and all these things, but not wanting to invest in your own critical thinking and your own, like, there's just a lot of very interesting ironies between the two conversations. There's just a lot of interesting ironies between the two conversations, but that's why I'm very honest in telling people, one, you should have a little bit of fear, and two, this is not easy, but the biggest advantage that did not exist yesterday that exists for you today is you have so much more help. You don't have to do it alone. And when I think back to like the iPad times or Chromebook times, anything you could think of for the last 10 years, that work that you had to do by yourself to change teaching and learning was so, like, now I look back, I'm just like, wow, like, how did so many people do those things? And when you can now leverage this AI tool in the right way, it can literally do 80% of the task for you, leaving you just having to do 20%. And then your 80% being freed to now do the things that you actually want to do that you've forgotten you enjoy doing.
I love it. I love it. And that's such a great message. And I don't know if it might just, I have one last question, and it kind of ties into what you just said. So my last question before we kind of wrap up the episode with our final three questions that we do at the end is, as we look towards the future, you know, what is one key message, I guess, just to kind of wrap everything up, that you would like educators to remember about the role of AI in education and maybe how they can actively participate in kind of shaping that future, you know, that coming now in 2024?
Yeah. I mean, I have one key message I've shared for like the last 15 years now, and I don't see it changing anytime soon. And that is that a culture of innovation begins with a culture of empathy. And if I get, again, always challenge people to get meta on what they mean, if I get super granular on what that means right now with AI, it's don't build a strategy on assumptions. Like last year, we spent so much of our time talking about cheating. Stanford just shared that study where they did the analysis on cheating rates. It hasn't even changed, they said, before ChatGPT to after ChatGPT. So this idea that we, and this is why the empathy lens becomes so critical, if you are not starting by asking people, what is holding you back? What are your frustrations? What are your fears? What are you thinking right now? But also, what do you wish you could do more of? What are you motivated by? Without that data, you are running blind. And so I think right now I'm seeing a lot of people, and this is slowly starting to change as people realize, I see way too many people building strategy and I even just like fears. And this is what fear is too, right? It's assumptions. This is why I say everything is mindset. So much of what is a problem in life is assumptions of things we think, our perception of what we think versus what actually is. Go scan your actual, you know, group of people, ask your students, ask your teachers, ask your administrators, ask people how they feel, what they're using, what they're doing, because without that data, like I said, you're running blind. And that's what we mean when we say the empathy work. But the Stanford, I was actually shocked to learn that cheating rates prior to ChatGPT were 40 to 60%. Like how much higher do you want it to go beyond that, you know? So I was really shocked to know those statistics and learn those. But the fact that there hasn't been any statistical difference that's so significant before and after, it should really be everybody's invitation to be like, all right, we're going to stop making assumptions. We're just going to go and ask people. And you just make your own life easier when you operate that way, because now people have told you what they're frustrated by, but also what they want. You plug that into ChatGPT, and now you've got a foundational point to actually build a strategy that people are invested in.
Love it. Thank you so much. This has been an amazing conversation, so fruitful, and definitely a lot of knowledge nuggets dropped that I am sure that many listeners can definitely sprinkle onto what they're already doing great. So thank you so much for being here this morning. But before we wrap up, we always love to end the show with these last three questions. And so hopefully you are ready, and hopefully, you know, like I said, we can definitely get some great answers here. So the first question that I always love to end the show with is the following. We know that every superhero has a weakness. And we know Superman, what weakened Superman was kryptonite, and it was just a big pain point for him. So I want to ask you, Saba, in the current state of education, what would you say is your current edu kryptonite?
So is the kryptonite the weakness or the strength?
The weakness.
Okay. So Clifton Strengths actually does a really good job of telling you this, where we'll tell you these are your top five strengths, but this is what a negative could be or what a weakness could be in it. One of my strengths is like being able to be very futuristic. And one of the biggest weaknesses is not everybody else can see what you see. And so you're over here, but everybody else you kind of are speaking to sometimes is over here. So how do you bridge that gap? And one of my commitments this year to address this weakness is I started a YouTube channel, because even that activity I just shared with you, if you've never done it before, or you just like, okay, wait, what? Or you are visual and you need to see it. I share a lot of ideas, but I did an audit of my social media last year. And I'm just like, wow, unless you're in a workshop with me, you wouldn't really know like 80% of how to do any of the things that I'm sharing with you online. And so anyways, my commitment this year is a YouTube channel where I'm literally like walking you through step by step in like 15 minutes or so each week through a different exercise, different activity, different strategy that you can go and implement. But that is my weakness. I can be over here and not over here.
Love it. No, and that's great. And I think for a lot of educators or a lot of, you know, people that are in tech, you know, we definitely, I can relate to that many times. So I think maybe that's something that I might need to do also as well. And I'm speaking about my job to do better with teachers and see different ways of reaching out to them as well. So thank you so much for sharing that. Question number two is, if you could have a billboard with anything on it, what would it be and why?
It would be a culture of innovation begins with a culture of empathy, because I so deeply believe in that statement. And I see the power of how it changes lives literally within 10 minutes of just having like no technology, no nothing, putting two people together in a conversation and having them interview each other and being like, okay, like when you think about the next 1 week, 1 month, what's something that you are frustrated by? What's something that, you know, you wish you could do that you can't do, and what's holding you back? That interaction that people have is just magic. Like if you wanted to try anything to get people to move in a more positive direction in the new year, whether it's a teacher, admin, whatever your dynamic is, just put two people together and ask them, what is frustrating you right now? What do you wish you could do that you couldn't do before, or that you can't do, and what's holding you back? And the vulnerability that emerges from that conversation is so simple, but so powerful. And then you whip out your AI tool and you're like, okay, let's see what it can do to help us. It's magic. Like empathy is magic in that sense. And so I think when we start there instead of the technology, I've just seen it so much. Like the outcomes you get are just unbelievable.
Awesome. Great. Thank you so much. And the last question is there a hobby or favorite activity that you do, aside from all the great stuff that you do on work and social media, but just something that you wish you can turn into a full-time profession?
Wow. I mean, so what's really interesting is like all the things that I've been doing for like the last like decade, I feel like this is the year I actually did make it my full-time profession. And all like I've like created content, like I've done like a podcast, I've done so many things for like so long as a hobby on the side, you know, while working at these different companies and doing these different jobs. And this is the first year that, or last year was the first year that I went all in on making my hobby like my full-time profession. So I don't know, check back in a couple of years and I'll share how it's going. But I also share that because I think for so many people, as you're making this transition, as you're thinking about, yeah, I would like to do more of this. Why do I do this? Or is there another career or pathway for me that I could do? Just, I think it's so important to know. I think too many times we sell things as either or, and it's never an either or. It's always transitional. It's always a journey. And so if there's anything like that you're thinking about, like, how do you start step one and just do like a little bit of it as a hobby and then organically kind of see where it goes? And the more you see results from something, the more you see your time and interest being put into something over other things, you'll know, okay, let me apply some strategy to this and let me actually now look at what that transition from hobby to profession looks like. And, you know, like I said, I think it's a crazy, crazy world that we're going to see in the next couple of years, not just from a technology perspective, but from socially, economically, politically, all these different lenses, that the more you ask those questions and the more options you give yourself and the more you are investing in your own skills, that's where you'll also have more freedom of choice for where to move, how to move, and to also allow other people to pick you up. The more you showcase your skills, you may not see that opening. I never applied to Apple. I never even, it was a tech company. What does a high school history teacher do at a tech company? Even at USC, I was hired by their medical school. What does a history teacher do at a medical school? Like, there are some connections you can't make, but somebody else who has a problem will see you as a solution because of something you've shared. And the more you do that, it's not just, again, what you think you're moving into, but it's what other people might bring you into as well.
I love it. That is so great and so insightful. Dr. Saba, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Like I said, this was such an amazing conversation. I definitely am leaving with a full bucket today of just so much knowledge and just so much to think about and chew on and just, you know, look through. And so thank you for just everything that you do. I know that 2023 was a big year for you. Like I said, just seeing what the work that you've done through your social media and everything that you're, you know, everywhere that you're at, you know, has been wonderful. And I know that everybody is definitely learning so much from you. And I wish you the best in this 2024. And thank you so much for starting 2024 with us here at My EdTech Life. It really means a lot to us. Like I said, a long time followers and listeners and just watchers of your work, and it's and also being inspired by what you did in 2023. So thank you so much for today. I really appreciate it. I know that all our audience members and all our listeners will definitely be taking away some just great knowledge from you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. This was amazing. Like I said, it was an absolute pleasure to kick off my year with you. So thank you.
I appreciate it. And for all our audience members, those of you that joined us live, thank you so much to Steve also, who joined us live with some comments. And we had Bobby Applegate here also. And to all of our audience members on Instagram too as well, thank you so much. On Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube, we really appreciate it. And those of you that are going to be catching this on the replay, thank you as always for making My EdTech Life what it is today. Please make sure you visit our website at myedtech.life, myedtech.life, where you can check out this amazing episode and the other 260 wonderful episodes with educators, creators, founders, practitioners. I promise you, you will find a little bit of something specifically for you where you can take some knowledge nuggets from and sprinkle them onto what you are already doing great. So please make sure you visit our website. And if you haven't done so yet, please make sure you follow us on all socials at My EdTech Life. We are pretty much everywhere at My EdTech Life. And please, if you can do us a favor, our mission for 2024 is to get to 1,000 subscribers on our YouTube channel. So if you haven't done so yet, please hop over to YouTube, give us a thumbs up, subscribe to our channel. We would definitely appreciate all of that support. So thank you as always, because we do what we do for you, and 2024 is going to be no different. We are going to bring you some amazing guests and amazing conversations that are going to help continue to shape and grow our education landscape, not only professionally, but personally as well. So thank you all for all of your support. And my friends, as always, until next time, stay techie.